Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. In this hour, True History. Later on, we hear the powerful series Destination Freedom, but right now it's We the People, a mix of true stories ranging from the anniversary of Jack Benny and Mary Livingston to an appeal for the March of Dimes. This episode, hosted by Milo Bolton, first heard on January 26, 1947, on CBS.
We the People. This is Milo Bolton welcoming you to another We the People program with the music of Oscar Bradley. Tonight, among our guests are Ella Logan,
Mary Livingston,
Hank Greenberg,
Jack Benny.
These and many other real people with real and exciting stories. Stories you hear only when the Gulf Oil Companies and your neighborhood Good Gulf Dealer present We the People. For the life of your car, go Gulf. News is made by people, and Gulf Oil's first two guests are people who recently made the headlines. The first one was nominated by Time magazine in its first issue of 1947 as the Woman of the Year. But the actual identity of this outstanding female was unknown. An intensive search was carried out with only a photograph as a clue. And just last week, she was located by a reporter. So now, Gulf presents at our We the People microphone, Mrs. Cora O'Connor of Worcester, Massachusetts, the Woman of the Year.
Oh, Mr. Bolton, I'm so ashamed the way I got all that publicity. I'm just an ordinary person, a wife and mother of three children, and I work at the YWCA. You'll admit all that's nothing special.
Well, that seems to make you a pretty typical American woman, Mrs. O'Connor. But how about telling us your story?
Of course. Every day I take the Caton Square bus home from work. So one night I waited for the 5 o'clock bus as usual. It came along, and I stepped to the terrace, but the bus rolled right on past me. It was too crowded. Well, about 10 minutes later, another one came along. This time, I put one foot off the curb and waved my hand. And can you imagine, Mr. Bolden, that second bus sped right on past me, too.
Oh, I know, Mrs. O'Connor. It's happened to all of us, and it certainly is mighty annoying.
Annoying? Goodness, Mr. Bolden. My family was waiting at home, and I had dinner to cook. Anyway, for the third bus, I waved both hands and shouted. It stopped, but only because of a red light.
Well, was it crowded too, Mrs. O'Connor?
It certainly was, but I was getting pretty desperate. A man standing next to me managed to squeeze on. Then the door shut almost in my face. I pounded on the door, then went right around in front of the bus to get the driver's attention. He just pointed to the people inside. Just then, the red light changed, and he began to race his engine as if to drive on. All of a sudden, I was mad. I just stood there in the road in front of the bus. Then the driver yelled out the window, "Okay, lady, I can stay here as long as you can." That's when something happened inside me. I thought, all right, then you will stay there. I didn't move, and the bus didn't move either. I learned later I'd stalled traffic for a mile and a half. But I was perfectly calm and cool. 20 minutes passed. I was beginning to feel foolish, but I was still mad. Then a news photographer took that picture.
And that picture of a woman standing firmly in front of a crowded bus made front pages from coast to coast.
Mr. Bolden, I don't know exactly why I held up that bus. Actually, I know very well it wasn't the bus company's fault. And I certainly hope I didn't set a bad example for others. As I said before, I really felt so ashamed, especially when I finally did get home.
Well, why? Why was that, Mrs. O'Connor?
Mr. Bolden, you won't believe it, but my husband was on that bus.
Gulf Oil's next guest made big sports news this week. You all know him. He's the famous baseball player who returned after 4 years in the Army to become the heaviest hitter in the major leagues, Hank Greenberg.
Okay, Hank. Well, Marlo, as you know, I've spent nearly all the baseball years of my life with one team, the Detroit Tigers, and the American League. I guess you know how a ball player feels about his team. It's more than just a job. You play for a ball club for 15 years, and it becomes your life.
Sure.
The local fans, every one of them, are your friends and advisors, and you do your darndest to give them the best baseball you're capable of. That's the way a ball player feels about his club, Marlowe. Well, last week, I was listening to radio at home. Suddenly, the announcer read a sports bulletin. Hank Greenberg sold by the Tigers of Pittsburgh. Well, I couldn't believe it, but it turned out to be all too true. I was sold not only to a new team, but to a different league, the National League.
Well, Hank, there's been a great deal of speculation in the newspapers on just how you feel about leaving the Detroit Tigers.
Well, that's exactly why I came here tonight, Marlowe. I want to put an end to all the rumors that are flying around and set the record straight once and for all. Baseball fans have no doubt heard the story that I did not want to stay with the Tigers. Well, tonight, on We the People, I want to disclose for the first time a letter I wrote to the owner of the Detroit club last December 16th. At that time, the job of general manager of the Tigers was open. So I wrote to my friend and boss, Walter O. Briggs, and I quote, "As you know, I have spent my entire playing career with Detroit Baseball Club, and I proudly feel I have helped to contribute to its success. Since I plan to retire from the active playing ranks in the near future, it is natural that I should like to continue my career in an executive capacity with the Detroit organization." Well, Marlowe, that's my answer to the rumor that I wish to leave the Detroit Tigers.
Well, how about the reply to your letter, Hank?
Well, a funny thing, I never got one.
Well, Hank, you're in swell shape. You led both leagues last year by knocking out 44 home runs. And it looks to me as if you can do a great job of ball playing for Pittsburgh. Now, how about that?
Well, my record in the past shows that I've done my best wherever I've played. And you can be sure that I'll always continue to do so. I've got some good years of ball playing ahead of me, and I hope to be getting my share of base hits for a long time. And when I can't, little Hank, my son who just arrived 3 days ago, will be in there slugging to make the old man proud.
Well, Hank, congratulations on that new addition to the family. Good luck, and thanks a million. Almost 15 years ago, a young girl left her home in Scotland, and she took the high road which led her to America. 1947 finds her on Broadway as the star of the newest big musical hit in New York, Finian's Rainbow. Tonight, she's here at our Gulf Oil microphone, and she's brought with her to We the People a story as warm and friendly as the songs she sings. Ladies and gentlemen, meet Ella Logan.
Good evening, Mr. Bolton, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart for all the kind things you just said about me. You know, it took a lot of nerve to come to America.
Well, what made you take the big step, Ella?
It was something a wonderful friend once said to me. In England, I played on the same bill with a comedy team called Carney and Sharp. And one day after a performance, Mr. Sharp came up to me, and he patted me on the shoulder. He looked at me for a minute, and then he said,
"You know, lass, there's a twinkle in your eye that takes the sadness out of me heart."
That's just what he said to me. And then he asked me if I would ever go to the United States and perform to the American audiences. I told him I was frightened. And then he said, "Well, if I get there first, Weella, I'll send for you, and we'll do a play together." Those words meant a great deal to me. After all, he was a very important man on the stage, and he gave me the confidence I needed.
And so you set out on the high road?
Aye, and it was straight to America. And you were all very kind to me.
And Ella, I'd like to tell We the People the way you showed your thanks. It would be hard to find another entertainer who traveled as many miles as you did during the war to bring entertainment to our fighting men. Now, your new play, Finian's Rainbow, is the first time that you played for a civilian audience in almost 4 years, isn't it?
That it is, Mr. Bolton. I played the part of an Irish girl who comes to America with her father. I'll never forget the day I went over to meet the cast. They were all standing on the stage, and I recognized most of them. All but the man who was to play Finian, my father. Well, when we were introduced, he looked at me for a minute and then said,
"You know, lass, there's a twinkle in your eyes that takes the sadness out of me heart."
Yes, it's the same man who said that to me a long, long time ago in England. He's Mr. Albert Sharp.
And this is your first visit to America, Mr. Sharp.
Yes, Mr. Bolton. I'm afraid I'll have to confess we had turned the tables on me and got here first. She took the high road and I took the low road, and she got here a few years before me.
Well, your words that you two would do a play together in America came true, but it certainly took a mighty long time, didn't it?
Well, Mr. Bolton, like Ella here, it was always been my life's dream to come over, but instead I stuck to the stages in Ireland and England and a few movies. I had just about put me dream away in mothballs when I got a telegram. Someone had seen me in a picture. They wanted me to come to America and play the role of Finian, and here I am at last.
Well, how do you like it here compared to Ireland?
Oh, fine. There's more Irishmen here.
So now you know why I wanted to be here tonight with Albert Sharp. He was the first to put the notion in my head about coming to America. I have been very happy here. It's my home now. And I want to introduce Albert to you, and I hope you'll open your heart to him, as you did to me, and as you do to all of us who come over here from the other side. And now, for old time's sake, Albert and I are going to sing a song that we used to sing together a long, long time ago, just for fun. It's called The Mountains of Mourne.
This New York's a wonderful sight, with the people here working by day and by night.
Now they don't sell potatoes, nor barley, nor wheat,
but there's gangs of them digging for gold in the street. At least when I asked them, that's what I was told. So I just took a hand at this digging for gold.
But for all that you found there, you might as well be
where the mountains of Mourne sweep down to the sea.
And there's beautiful girls here.
Ah, well, never mind.
With beautiful shapes nature never designed.
So I'll wait for the wild rose that's waiting for me.
Where the mountains of Mourne sweep down to the sea.
Favorite Love and Bloom, you know you're in for fun and laughter. For that's the song that means Jack Benny's on the air. But tonight, Love and Bloom has an even more special meaning. For it's the 20th wedding anniversary of Jack Benny and his famous partner, Mary Livingston, one of Hollywood's most happily married couples. What's the secret behind this happy marriage? Well, tonight you're going to hear the answer from Jack and Mary themselves. So come in, Hollywood.
Congratulations, Jack Benny and Mary Livingston, on your 20th wedding anniversary, and welcome to We the People.
Thank you, Tom Hanlon.
Well, how about thanking me? I did the time.
Now, Mary, wait, it hasn't been that bad.
Maybe not. Anyhow, I won a bet.
A bet? On our 20th anniversary?
Yeah. 20 years ago, a woman bet me I couldn't stand you this long.
That sounds just like your mother.
Was your mother.
Well, she just didn't want to lose me, that's all.
Then why was she trying to sell all the girls' raffle tickets?
Because your mother put her up to it.
Oh, Jack, you can't make me sorry. You can say anything you want about my mother.
Not on the air, I can't.
Oh, Jack, only joking, Tom. We're both very happy.
You and Jack?
No, me and my mother.
Now, Mary, don't be smart. You know we're happy. It says we have to be in our contract with Lucky Strike.
Well, say, how did you two meet each other?
Well, it was in a bookstore. We both were buying a copy of the same book, a novel called I Stand Condemned.
I Stand Condemned?
Yes, it's a story of a man who goes to the electric chair and leaves three lovely children. We, thee, and people. Say, Mary.
Oh, pardon me, it's your line.
Yes, that is it.
Mary, tell us about your honeymoon. Where did you go?
To Niagara Falls. It was wonderful. I could hardly wait to leave there for New York to tell Jack about the place.
Now, wait a minute, Mary. Do you mean you went on your honeymoon without Jack?
Yes, I had already seen the fall. I think everyone should see Niagara Falls. You know, even single people.
Well, supposing you tell me when the proposal took place.
It was a few months after we met. One night, Jack suddenly got down on one knee and proposed to me.
I did not.
You did, too.
Well, why don't you tell the truth, Mary? Listen, Tom. Here's what happened. We were sitting on the sofa in Mary's room. She dropped her handkerchief on the floor. I bent down to pick it up. The minute I got down on my knee, she said, "Oh, Jack, this is so sudden." And between this and southern, her mother called the preacher.
But, Jack, you really did propose to Mary, didn't you?
Yes, it was pretty tough, you know, with all those interruptions.
Interruptions?
Yeah, the next time I started to propose, her father came in, saw me on my knees, and yelled, "I'll fade you for any part of a dollar."
Oh, really, Ann? What did you do this time, Mary?
I won $2 and bought the marriage license.
That's right, and I held up the bus for 2 hours. I also held Greenberg on third. Hiya, Hank.
Say, Mary, before you go, would you tell the folks what Jack gave you for an anniversary present?
Oh, the usual gift.
What's that?
A pair of shoelaces with plastic tips.
Now, Mary, why don't you tell them the truth? What about the car I gave you for your anniversary?
Did Jack really give you a car?
Uh-huh. A convertible coupe.
And what did you give Jack?
A convertible toupee.
Mary.
On a nice day, we both put our tops down.
Mary, you know, you didn't even kiss me for giving you that new car.
Well, if you really want a kiss, here it comes. Well, go on, Jack. The next line in the script is yours. Read the next line. Jack, read the next line.
Wait till I wipe the steam off my glasses. Good night, folks.
Good night.
At one time or another, all of us feel pretty down on our luck. Feel that the whole world is against us. Well, We the People's next guest has a story of courage and faith in a bright future that should help all of us the next time things go wrong. That guest is waiting now at our Gulf Oil microphone in Minneapolis. Come in, Minneapolis.
Hello, everybody. My name is Marion Oliver. You'll have to be patient. I can speak only a few words at a time. Because I'm talking from an iron lung.
Who? I'm Captain Hero. Marion Pearson, the polio ward at General Hospital. That whishing sound you hear is the iron lung that keeps Marion alive. She can talk only when the iron lung is breathing out. Marion is 26 years old and a dancer. She wanted to be a musical comedy star and had a good start, too, before the war came along. For nearly 5 years, she was a USO entertainer. Went everywhere, from Alaska to Africa, from Italy to the South Pacific. I love that USO work. Even stayed with it after the war. But one day, the doctors sent me home for a rest. Then, while I was still weak,
polio struck me down. I'm afraid I don't remember much about those first few days.
Well, I do, Marion.
Folks,
when Marion came in last August, she was unconscious, completely paralyzed. And it was touch and go for a long time as to whether she'd live. But Marion had one thing we couldn't see at first, a fighting heart. As we brought her slowly back to consciousness, we found she still had the power of speech, but her lungs were paralyzed. She's strengthening her voice by the day, though, through exercises and talking.
I can wiggle my fingers now, and I'll soon move my legs. Just 2 weeks ago, my girlfriend moved her legs for the first time. Yesterday, she kicked a book right off the foot of her bed. You just wait and see. I'll beat this polio yet.
Well, Marion, the way you're fighting, I wouldn't be a bit surprised one fine day to see you putting on your dancing shoes again.
You can bet on it, nurse. I'll go right on getting better until I'm well and can dance again. Thanks to you and the folks out there and all you've done for me through the March of Dimes. And now, if you don't mind, I'm just a bit worked. So I'll say goodnight. But won't you wish upon a star to help my dreams come true? And remember, everybody, life may get you down, but only you can count yourself.
We the people speak. This is Milo Bolton again reminding you to listen in next week. You'll meet ace comedian Milton Berle, and along with the music of Oscar Bradley, you'll also meet many other real people with real stories you hear only when the Gulf Oil Companies and your neighborhood Good Gulf dealer present We the People. For the life of your car, go Gulf. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
We the People, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 26th of January, 1947 on CBS. It's an hour of true history on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now one of the most powerful and important radio shows of its golden era, its Destination Freedom. Though not heard on a national basis, it was broadcast out of WAMQ in Chicago, an NBC radio affiliate, and told stories new and old of Black America and the fight against racial oppression in other countries. At one point, members of the Ku Klux Klan were marching outside of the studio for about a month, but that didn't deter the writers or the program director, who kept the show on the air strong from 1948 through 1951. This next broadcast, from October 3, 1948, tells the story of a freed slave turned revolutionary called Citizen Toussaint.
Destination Freedom. The Chicago Defender and station WMAQ bring you Destination Freedom, a radio series dramatizing the great democratic traditions of the Negro people, interwoven in the pageant of history and a part of America's own Destination Freedom. Today, Destination Freedom tells the story of Toussaint Louverture, the liberator of Santo Domingo, in a chapter entitled Citizen Toussaint.
The year was 1801. Napoleon Bonaparte had come home from his conquering campaign. The little general had come home to check his colonies, to rest his troops, to prepare to conquer the West. And when they brought him a strange constitution signed by an unknown man, Toussaint Louverture, the general called in his ministers and officers. The ministers trembled. The general spoke.
Who is this Toussaint Louverture? Speak up.
The minister, the governor, the deputy sat quiet and waited for the rage to roll over.
Nothing wrong with your hearing, is there?
Napoleon spoke.
Who is Toussaint?
Sire, as I said, he is the governor of Santo Domingo.
Weren't you appointed governor?
Yes, but that was before we lost control of the colony. I've explained it, sire.
Explained it? While I cover France with glory, expand the empire in Europe and Africa, you fools lose control of the richest colony in the world, the key to the West. You're Minister of Marines, Anton. How did you allow this to happen?
Sire, we sent troops to the colony to stop this man.
This man?
This slave, sire. But this Toussaint is no ordinary slave, sire.
Toussaint? Is that all you can say? Whoever among you is responsible for allowing him, the least among Frenchmen, to send me a constitution from the colony of Santo Domingo and tell me, not ask me to sign it, we'll pay for it. You, Leroy, you were governor of the island. The minister said he sent you troops. What did you do with them?
I wanted to explain, Your Excellency. It really isn't my fault. No one's fault. No one fought harder than I to keep up slavery. We succeeded until this Toussaint took things into his hands, and then the slaves began to riot.
Wherever there are slaves, there are riots. I expect it. I do not expect to be insulted by this constitution coming after my conquests. When France is ready to invade the West and expand the territory in Louisiana, you come sniveling back from the colony with an equal rights constitution from a citizen Toussaint.
Your Excellency has never fought in Santo Domingo, as some of us have.
And what is there about Santo Domingo that's worse than Poland, Egypt, Austria?
Toussaint, Your Excellency. But he stands only because Napoleon has not had time to look into the colonies. And now that the war with England is over, you'll conquer him as you've conquered others. Shall we expect it soon, sire?
In due time, Minister, in due time. First, I'll ferret out who's responsible for his rise to power. Then I'll proceed. I've not become the first consul of France by galloping ahead and leaving the facts behind. If you expect to conquer him, you must have the facts. Who is this Toussaint? Where did he come from? How did he get his power, Governor?
Your Excellency, I tell you, I did all I could. But the landlords and the planters and the poor whites were always bickering over the right to rule. They caused this.
It's not the fault of planters. I've been a planter myself. We've always done well for France.
That's what I'm talking about, sire. This bickering over the spoils caused it.
Bickering?
Your bickering?
Wait till you be quiet. You tell me what you know of this colony. I will put it together and proceed to get back what France has lost, as I've always done. You say this Toussaint has two sons here in France, eh?
Yes, sire. They've been here for 10 years. They're studying at my academy.
Mm-hmm. And, Governor, you say you know how the revolt started.
It started before the Bastille fell in France. Someone smuggled the slogan Liberty, Equality, Fraternity into the island. That was the first piece they put into the Constitution. That decided this Toussaint, they say, to send his sons to France. Then the trouble came.
The first consul began to fit the pieces together, the odd pieces that added up to the Constitution that lay on his table. The Constitution that first began to grow one night in Santo Domingo 10 years earlier, when the priestess D'Umbrella drove a cart full of gourds and two tall boys to the seashore and stopped.
Paul, Leon, wake up, wake up. This is where you get off. Toussaint told me to bring you here. I've done it. A ship will pick you up. Are you ready?
If Father wants us to go, we'll go. But, D'Umbrella, why do we have to leave the island?
Every night, Father goes out in the mountains to meet the slaves. Now he wants us to leave. Well, I am glad.
Your father has business that's handled best where no one can hold his sons as hostages.
What is he going to do?
You ask too many questions. I've done what I promised. Go to Paris. You'll be free. Do what you want, but don't forget to sign your father.
How can we forget Father?
Don't forget what he's fighting for, no matter what they tell you in France. Now, go. I'm late delivering my goods.
D'Umbrella.
Yes?
What's in the goods?
Only rattles to make music.
Won't you leave me one? Father told me what they say.
Oh, bless you, boy. Here, take it. Do you want one, Leon?
I am too big to play with rattles. Besides, in Paris, they've got better things to make music with.
Now, go on. You leave as one of the last and least of the people in Santo Domingo. When you come back, you'll be among the first. That's what the gourds say. Huh? Go on. Must peddle my gourds.
And D'Umbrella turned back and drove her cart and gourds through the streets and the plantations and stopped at the hut of the leader of the dock slaves, Dessalines. Dessalines was patching his fence.
Dessalines!
Conjure woman. What do you want?
Toussaint sent me with a message.
Toussaint never sends anyone out empty-handed.
I've got gourds.
I can make rattle gourds myself.
Mine talk.
What do they say?
They say, to those who understand, come together tonight in the glade of Old Gap Mountain.
Give the passwords, woman. What do the gourds say?
The first shall be last, and the last shall be first.
And the time has come. I'm supposed to serve drinks for the guests of the governor tonight. Let them serve their own drinks. I'll be in the glade.
You'll not be alone. Toussaint wants you to strike the first blow. Here, take the gourds. Tell Christophe and Henri. Pass the word on.
And the gourds rattled, and the word went around.
Christophe, the first shall be last. The last shall be first. Gather in the glade at midnight tonight. Pass the word on.
The first shall be last, and the last shall be first. Pass the word on.
The first shall be last, and the last shall be first.
The first shall be last, and the last shall be first.
The first shall be last, and the last shall be first.
And on the sultry night, the leaders assembled in the glade and sat on a half circle and mapped out the new state until Dumbrella asked for the hour that the change would come about.
When, Dessalines, when?
You ask me? I'm only elected to lead, not to set the hour. Where's Toussaint? Why didn't he come?
Toussaint is attending the sick on the waterfront. He's with us in spirit.
For the work that's got to be done, we need a man's body as well as his spirit. You're a conjure woman. Did he send a message by you?
He sent a message for all of us. Let the drums and the gourds speak. Toussaint will talk.
In the darkness, in the glade, Dumbrella called for Toussaint, and some thought they caught his voice in the air.
Brothers and friends, I have undertaken to help you avenge your wrongs, to open a new world, a world where liberty and equality will rule. Unite with me for this common cause. Pick an hour, and I'll be with you.
Did you hear him? Did you?
The faithful said nothing, but heard in their own hearts the echo of their own ideas, and they wondered if they dared carry them out.
Now, Dessalines, you'll set the hour and the day.
Very well. Toussaint has said there'll be a time when the men who live by the profit of other men's work will fall out among themselves. Toussaint thinks they'll fight to see who'll reap the lion's share of what we sow. When that time comes, it'll be time to see if the black slaves in Santo Domingo can do what the white slaves did in France.
Set the hour. Set the hour.
Those who work in the mountain plantation shall strike the first blow.
But what about us and the lowlands?
You'll strike the second and final blow. You'll strike the night you hear the cocks crowing.
Cocks don't crow at night.
Cocks crow when there's light.
There's no light at night.
We'll make the night light up like a sunrise. Touch the torches to everything that burns. When the governor gathers his gang together to settle the matter of who will rule us, we'll strike. Umbrella, kill the pig and make your wine. Seal everyone's lips until the cocks crow. Make the wine.
A pig squealed and his blood drained into a gourd with gunpowder and rum. The gourd went around the circle that night and the next night, and the slaves in the lowlands listened for the cocks crowing, and Umbrella's wine was passed around. And in the governor's mansion, the governor passed a paler wine to his guests, the planters, the poor whites, and the aristocrats, who met to decide who would have the loudest voice in the colony. Planter Pierre spoke loudest.
Now, Governor, I don't mind a night like tonight mixing with the common elements. But are we planters to be put on the same footing with commoners, peasants, laborers? Is that why you ask us in?
Well, Monsieur Pierre, it's this way. The king is disturbed about the quarreling.
He's disturbed? Governor, I represent the landless, everyday French workers on this island. As Frenchmen, we're entitled to as many rights as Monsieur Pierre and his planters.
Monsieur the Governor has called me in to speak for the monarchy. The trouble with this colony is the fact that there are too few leaders with true royal ancestry directing it. Now, Governor, before we take our case to the king...
Oh, please, my dear Duke, I meant no insult by calling everyone here under the same roof, but we've got to have harmony in the colony.
Until you enforce the rights of the citizens without property, there'll be no harmony, I can tell you that.
Oh, you see, Governor, when you let every rabble and rowdy into the colony, you get this.
You're right, Pierre. We've proposed to the governor that he ban the immigration of anyone without royal blood, except, of course, the slaves.
Try and ban our people from the colony, and you'll regret the day you did it.
Oh, monsieur, that's not why we're here tonight. Calm yourselves, calm yourselves. Here we rule the richest colony in the world. Look at it, an island the size of Ireland. We have a strong nation behind us. We've got at our command nearly 200,000 slaves. There are 500 plantation owners and 30,000 other Frenchmen.
And we 30,000 equal the planters in every way except...
Except, monsieur, you don't own anything. Remember that.
Oh, no.
You don't own a single solitary slave.
Aren't we Frenchmen? All the same blood and race?
Blood, race? Oh, I imagine so. I'll grant it you're white. Where is your property, monsieur?
You've got it all.
No, no, monsieur. I respect your positions, but France expects more out of us than bickering. Only yesterday I had to warn you not to quarrel in front of the slaves. It's bad for their morale. We've done well here, and I think as long as we have slaves, we'll do better. But I say again, too much squabbling may entice the slaves to riot.
They know better. What can unarmed men do in the face of our guns and soldiers? What can they do? We've beaten down their riots before.
Of course, but it's not only the slaves we've got to watch. On one side of us are the Spaniards, waiting to take over as soon as we weaken. And on the other, there are the English, with a strong force on Santo Domingo. Oh, monsieur... We first men of the colony have too much to lose by not joining together.
Then stop this talk of liberty, equality, fraternity among the French sailors and rabble. And this talk of voting rights for those who don't own any property.
Why,
if that sort of thing keeps up, why, even a slave will be asking for a day off from work. And, Governor, I would like to settle this matter of Toussaint.
Toussaint?
Yes. Toussaint was a slave of the Breda plantation. He's got an uncanny influence over those with whom he works. He knows something of medicine and helps to heal the sick.
Toussaint! All I hear are reports of Toussaint. What is he like?
Mild sort of slave.
Tell me, is he dangerous?
I believe so.
Then it's settled. We'll have him hang. I may not know how to determine who's first and second in the colony, but I know how to handle those who are last. Now, monsieur, shall we continue to administer the colony and not squabble over the wealth, eh? We'll drink on it. A toast, gentlemen?
A toast! A toast.
You frown, Monsieur Pierre. I know how to handle those who are last. Now, Monsieur, shall we continue to administer the colony and not squabble over the wealth, eh? We'll drink on it. A toast, gentlemen.
A toast.
You frown, Monsieur Pierre. Does the wine taste sour?
No, I was frowning at the hour. I didn't know it was so late.
Late?
Yes, look outside. The sun's coming up.
There's a strange glow in the sky. But the sun would hardly come up from the west. But the cock's crowing. The sun must be rising.
No, Governor. Look out there. The plantation's on fire.
Huh?
Right. It's not the sun rising.
Well,
it's the slaves.
Well, call out the militia. Get the troops. They're aiming to take the city. It's another riot.
I'm afraid it's not just a riot this time, Governor. It looks like a revolution.
And the midnight sun rose over the island, and the last came to be first, and the first came to be last. The governor, the planters, the duke sent out the troops in the cannon. The slaves killed the troops and kept the cannon. The fire rained for 40 days and nights over Santo Domingo until every post on the French part of the island fell. Toussaint was in command. He marched to the governor's mansion in front of an army in rags and with tools for weapons. The governor and planter Pierre watched them come.
Pierre, which one is Toussaint?
He'll be the one in front of the troops.
What? That man leading them up to the gates? Is that the terrible Toussaint?
It's he.
But he's an old man. He's not a young hot-blood, the kind of man I'd expect to see doing this. He's an old man.
Well, if a little child can lead them, as Le Bon Dieu says, why can an old man?
How can an old man who's been a slave all his life lead a revolution and expect to hold out against the strongest state in Europe, eh? How can he?
Sure, the governor? Toussaint is at the door. Suppose you put the question to him, not me.
I am Toussaint L'Ouverture.
I am the governor. I know my troops have surrendered to you, but the King of France shall take revenge on every one of you for this. The penalty for rioting is death on the rack.
I know it, monsieur. I've watched hundreds die for rioting for freedom.
It's why we decided against rioting and for revolution. I've come to liberate you.
Liberate me? From what?
I've come to liberate you from the king, the planters from their privileges, and my people from poverty and oppression. You are used to lawmaking. I want you to help draw up new laws for the colony.
Before any new laws are written, there will be troops from France here to put your slaves back where they belong. Look at your position. In a week, the British will see that the colony is weak and come in to take it. If they can get it before the Spanish come in, you and your ragamuffin army will wish you were still slaves for the French.
The people will be slaves for no one, Governor. You're looking backwards, not forward. That's why I offer you a chance to help in the new state.
What help do you expect from me, except to help hang you when it's time?
You know something of lawmaking. Your job as governor's gone. You'll lead my research staff.
Me, research?
Yes. A new country, the United States, has just framed a constitution and a bill of rights. You'll put your learned planters and aristocrats to help draft one like it for Santo Domingo.
The British and Spanish armies will hang every man in your band before you rule a year.
Exactly, Governor. That's why I intend to rid the island of foreign invaders before the year is out.
And old Toussaint took his men against the Spanish army that struck against the new free men. The same freedmen who had broken the hold of the French, cut the colony from the Spanish Empire. The commander negotiated a peace with Toussaint.
My king has asked me to end the war with you, Senor Toussaint. The whole eastern half of San Domingo is under your orders. The keys to the cities we own are on the table here. You may take them. What are your orders?
I have no orders. I've not come as a conqueror, but to free you and your slaves and to let them become citizens in a new state. As for the keys, to take them would make me appear a conqueror. Will you hand them to me, please?
Toussaint accepted the keys, freed the Spanish half of the island, and struck with his men against the British. And again the invader surrendered. The English admiral negotiated a truce.
In 5 years' war with you, you've cost Britain 100,000 men and half a fleet. If you're willing to sign a free trade agreement, we'll pull out without blockading your ports. The island is yours.
The trade agreement is yours.
I'll be glad to pull out of this cursed island.
You will. But, Admiral, you've lately brought in 16,000 slaves. I'd like for you to leave them behind.
But, General, we've already promised them freedom in our own colonies.
In this colony, freedom is a fact, not a promise. You'll leave them behind.
Very well. I suppose you're acting under orders of your new general in France, Napoleon Bonaparte?
No, Admiral. I act under orders from the old general in Santo Domingo, Toussaint. I'll write Napoleon about our understanding.
The first general of Santo Domingo wrote to the first general of Europe, and there was no answer. Toussaint called in the governor to send him on a mission.
Be careful, General Toussaint. Since Napoleon has been in France, the planters and old officials have begun to rise, and they expect to get their old positions back.
Never mind. I have something to end old powers forever. Guard, bring in the governor.
Yes. General Toussaint, you sent for me?
Yes. It's taken 10 years to free this island. Now we're ready to go with the new state.
You called me in to remind me of that?
I called you to remind you that I once asked you to prepare the draft of a constitution for the island. A constitution that would guarantee the liberty we've just won. Do you remember that, Governor?
I remember it. We drew up a constitution. You rejected it.
You rejected too many people as citizens. We've had the electors draw up the constitution.
What do you want me for?
You've been selected, Governor, to take our constitution to France.
Me? To France?
We'd like to get Napoleon's approval. Will you take it?
I'll take it. You'll get more than the general's approval, Monsieur Toussaint. You'll get the butt of his revenge for your impudence in the colony. All Europe is afraid of Napoleon. When he has time, he'll take care of the upstarts in the colonies.
Tell Napoleon we ask him to confirm the constitution of the new state.
And if he doesn't?
Then we'll confirm it ourselves.
Toussaint, believe me, if you want to be in power, do not upset Napoleon Bonaparte. Nothing will do it quicker than an equal rights constitution. The new regime could never allow that. It'd be your death warrant. The wrath of Napoleon is not to be laughed at, but feared.
I fear God, Governor, but I fear no man. Take the Constitution to Napoleon. We still have legal ties to France. We'll observe them. And while you're in France, Governor, tell my sons it won't be long before they can come home to a new free nation. Go on, Governor.
The governor took the Constitution to the conqueror Napoleon. It lay on the general's desk while minister sat quiet and his anger raged. Then the little general spoke and the ministers relaxed.
There's no time to punish the officials guilty of allowing a slave like Toussaint to grow bigger than the colony. There is only time to recover what we've lost.
General Bonaparte, you're right as usual. If we lose Santo Domingo, we lose Louisiana. If we lose that,
the colony will not be lost. I'll see to that. Before we expand from Louisiana, the island of Santo Domingo must be secure.
Now, it won't take much to crack this desire, sire. With his ragamuffin army, it'll be easy. Attack with a few of our best ships, he'd collapse in a week.
You're right about that.
The general listened. The general considered. Then he decided.
We'll prepare for war.
Yes, sire.
I'll answer this to Sam. Prepare a letter telling him Napoleon is still considering his constitution. Praise the work he's done in making the island prosperous.
Yes, sire.
Then we'll prepare for war the Bonaparte way. Where is Leclerc, my brother-in-law?
Here, sire.
Since the day you married my sister Pauline, you've been too busy to give her a honeymoon, Leclerc.
I've been fighting in your campaign, sire.
Yes. And for that, I'm going to reward you with the rule of the richest colony in the world, Santo Domingo. We're preparing now to recapture it from this...
Toussaint?
You've heard of him, too?
Sire, the English and Spanish army speak well of him. They say he's trained an army that's stronger than any in Europe.
Do they say his army is better than Napoleon?
That's impossible.
It's better. You will command the expedition.
Yes.
I'll take care of the directions of the army and navy. Altogether, you'll have 80 ships and 60,000 men. It'll be the largest fleet in history. Can you handle it?
Yes, sire, but this Toussaint, they say
the devil with what they say. The hope of an empire is at stake. Will you let an old ex-slave block us? I think I understand this man, Toussaint. He has two sons who are studying in the academy. After I speak to them, you will carry them to talk to their father. Meanwhile, I'll assure Toussaint that you come as a protector, not as an invader. But whatever you do, get Toussaint off the island, dead or alive. After you have conquered the colony, there'll be time to restore slavery. Get your squads ready. I'll direct you.
And Napoleon filled his squadrons with his veterans and directed them across the ocean toward the mountains of Santo Domingo, where Toussaint and his general Dessalines sat on horseback, watching the wind blow the ships closer.
Dessalines?
Yes, Toussaint?
Would a man who wants peace come with 80 ships, or would a man who wants to restore slavery?
Well, what can we do, Toussaint? What can our few thousand men do against a fleet like that?
We can drive them off. We can scatter their bones over the rocks and mountains and let liberty grow on their graves. This island's free. It'll stay free.
Well, how can we do it against a trained army?
Come with me. You'll see how. They think they're only coming to gain glory by crushing natives armed only with spears and shields. Come with me to the interior. I've trained every man on this island to maneuver and use a gun. Let them shoot.
And the ships came to the harbors and fought their way inside while the bodies piled high. And Toussaint's men put the torch to everything that burned and retreated to the hills and struck out again and again until the trained troops of Bonaparte began to fall apart. And the sons of Toussaint were sent out to find their father and to plead with him. And they came upon him sitting upon a rock in a mountain glade.
Father, father.
My sons, why did you come here?
Napoleon sent us, father.
Why did he send you here at a time like this?
Father, we have a letter for you from Napoleon. They want me to tell you what people in France think of you. Now, I've talked to Napoleon, and he says you're foolish to fight against his army. Nobody wins against Napoleon, and you're an old man.
Yes, I'm getting old.
Then
come to terms with Napoleon, Father. All he wants is peace. He said so. What are you fighting for here?
I see they have trained you well, Leon. I thought my sons would understand that I'm fighting to remake human relations here, to change men and women a bit, to set up a new state.
New state? You're a foolish old man. Napoleon offers you a position in his army, under his command, and you stay on this island fighting for the devil knows what. Well, Paul?
Yeah?
I told General Bonaparte it would do no good to talk to him. Are you going back to the ship? Paul? Are you going back to Napoleon?
No, Leon. I'll stay with Father. He's my Napoleon.
The Napoleon of Santo Domingo, with one son by his side and the other with his enemy, fought with the freedmen and peasants. Fought off the ships until a truce was made, until a trick took him into the enemy ship and locked him in iron. And Toussaint died in a dungeon. But the people of Santo Domingo lived free in the sunshine.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of the story of Toussaint Louverture, brought to you by the Chicago Defender newspaper and station WMAQ's Department of Education.
Destination Freedom, on Tuned to Yesterday from October 3rd, 1948, from WMAQ in Chicago, an NBC radio affiliate. And that wraps this hour of True History on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for listening.